This episode is based on a chapter from Laws of Life, Book 2. Now, Build the System for Your Life by Jack Spurko. And specifically, we are looking at Chapter 6, Stand Still, and Life Will Move You Back.
Right, which is such a powerful concept.
It really is. So I'm a life systems coach, right? And my whole day-to-day is basically helping clients take these, you know, these massive, super vague, long-term goals and wrestling them down into actual measurable weekly execution systems.
Which is incredibly hard to do without the right framework. And while I'm a financial independence and career planning analyst, so my entire focus is always on the math of time, you know, the undeniable power of compounding, accountability, and actual practical tracking.
Yeah, exactly. So our mission for you, the listener, in this deep dive is to basically completely dismantle this illusion that standing still is somehow a safe or like a neutral choice.
Because it's not. It's really not.
No, it's actually the most dangerous choice. We're going to show you why life's default setting is actually a current that is actively pushing you backward. And then we want to hand you the exact framework you need to guarantee forward progress.
Right, because to build any kind of functional system in your life, you first have to actually understand the environment you're operating in.
Yeah.
And this chapter paints a pretty blunt picture of that environment. It starts with that famous Ray Kroc quote, as long as you're green, you're growing. As soon as you're ripe, you start to rot.
Which is brutal, but true. I mean, there's just no stasis in nature, right? And there's no stasis in human achievement either.
Exactly. That brings up the river metaphor, which I think is just brilliant.
Oh, the Richard Bach story.
Yeah.
Yeah, from his book, Illusions.
Yes. So for those who haven't read it, it describes this colony of tiny creatures that live at the bottom of a fast-moving creek. And the water is just rushing by at this incredible speed.
Right. And these creatures, they just spend their entire lives clinging to the rocks on the bottom. Like, that's their whole existence.
Right. It's all they know. And they are absolutely terrified of the current because to them, it just represents total chaos.
Until, you know, one of them gets this crazy idea. He realizes that just clinging to the rock forever is basically a slow, exhausting death.
Yeah.
So he announces to the whole colony, like, hey, if I just let go, the current will take me to places we can't even imagine.
And naturally, they all tell him he's completely insane. They're like, you're going to die. The current is going to violently bash you on the rocks.
But he lets go anyway. And the funny thing is, the colony is actually kind of right at first. I mean, the current totally does bash him against the bottom. He takes some really severe hits.
Yeah, he gets knocked around. But the key is, he survives that initial turbulence. And eventually, the water lifts him up, and he actually rises above the rest of them. He starts flying freely past all the creatures downstream.
It's such a great visual.
Yeah.
But I think the really profound insight here isn't even about the guy who let go.
No, it's about the ones who stayed behind.
Exactly. It's the psychology of the creatures still clinging to the rocks. When they see him flying past, they don't look at him and go, oh, hey, we should let go too.
Right. They don't change their behavior at all. Instead, they decide he must be some kind of magic prophet.
Right. They start singing his praises and waiting for his miraculous return, which is just wild.
Well, it's a defense mechanism, you know. By labeling him a prophet, they totally absolve themselves of the responsibility to take that same risk. They can just spend generations clinging to their rocks, dreaming of flying, even though the exact same mechanism of flight was right there for all of them.
Yeah, they protect their egos by pretending his success was magic, not just, you know, mechanics. And the author is super clear that we have to extract practical wisdom from this.
Which is what?
Well, it's recognizing the danger of clinging to comfort. The author brings in this Garth Brooks lyric from the song The River, choose to chance the rapids and dare to dance the tide.
I love that.
Right. You just have to mathematically accept that letting go guarantees you're going to get bashed on the rocks occasionally. Like, failure and pain are just built into the model. But it is vastly superior to the alternative.
And we should probably define what that alternative actually is.
Yeah.
The author calls it the default life arc, which is essentially the average outcome in modern society.
Oh, man. The default arc. It's so predictable.
It really is. It's like, go to school, follow the rules, get good grades. Then you transition to a job, follow more rules, maybe get a few incremental promotions if you're lucky.
And then you just grow old, save whatever tiny bit happens to be left over at the end of the month, and work until your physical decline literally forces you to stop.
Right, and then you're handed your gold watch and sent off to your so-called golden years. But the statistical reality of that default arc is just brutal.
It's awful. You might get, what, 5 to 15 decent years if you were incredibly lucky?
Yeah, and then your health starts a sharp decline, or your savings run out, or usually both. And you end up barely surviving on Social Security, and then you die.
It's grim. But the author makes a really important point here. Average outcomes come directly from drifting. They rarely come from malicious bad intentions.
Exactly. Nobody plans to end up like that.
But let me put my coaching hat on for a second and push back on this, because this is where my clients get incredibly defensive.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I see people every single day who are just exhausted. They feel like they're working 60 hours a week, grinding themselves into absolute dust, just trying to hold on to their jobs and provide for their families.
They're gripping that rock with bloody fingers.
Exactly. So they ask, and it's a fair question, why does all this intense, undeniable effort still result in an average downward drift?
Well, that is the pivotal question of this entire deep dive. And from an analytical perspective, working hard without a directed, systemic mechanism is essentially just treading water against life's constant friction.
The friction is always there.
Always.
Yeah.
The environment itself. I mean, inflation, technological change, biological aging, it is all moving against you. If you aren't intentionally taking new ground, that environmental friction is systematically pushing you backward. Regression is absolutely guaranteed if you are only playing defense. It doesn't matter how hard you play it.
That is such a huge perspective shift. If life is constantly pushing against us, we have to identify the actual currency of that current, right? Like, what is the fuel of that friction?
It's time.
Time, exactly. The author operates on this core philosophy. Tick tock, tick tock, the clock ticks for us all. You're either building more freedom and liberty in your life, or life is pushing you backwards.
And that brings us right into the urgency of time and this concept of capital. The chapter brings up a really well-known economic framework by Ethan Rowland and Gregory Landau called the 8 forms of capital.
Right, because when most people hear the word capital, they just think of the balance in their checking account.
Right.
Right. Like financial capital.
Yeah, but Rowland and Landau break human resources down into 8 distinct areas. You've got social, intellectual, spiritual, material, financial, living, cultural, and experiential capital.
And the fundamental rule of that whole framework is that any form of capital can basically be converted into another, usually with some kind of friction.
Sure. Like you take your intellectual capital, say your knowledge of engineering, and you apply it to material capital, like steel and wire, to build a machine.
Right.
And then you sell that machine for financial capital.
Right. But the author actually adds a 9th form of capital to this list, and he argues that it's the ultimate master capital. He calls it temporal capital, which is simply time.
Temporal capital is the master currency because time is the singular, non-renewable catalyst that you absolutely need for any other form of capital to build value or to convert.
Yeah, you can't fake it.
No, you can't. Think about living capital. A truly mature, thriving forest ecosystem takes centuries to form. Or intellectual capital, just a baseline K-12 education demands 13 years of consistent cognitive application.
Or even cultural capital, right?
Huh?
Like deep-rooted community traditions. Those require generations of time to build any sort of profound significance. You literally cannot artificially rush the conversion. And the really scary part is, unlike the vastness of the universe, your personal temporal capital has a hard, unyielding cap.
Yeah, the mortality cap.
Right. The author notes that, on average, men get about 75 trips around the sun, and women get about 80. And he pulls this deeply unsettling quote from Gretchen Rubin. The days are long, but the years are short.
Oof, that one always hits hard.
It does, because when you're burned out from a 70-hour work week, a random Tuesday feels like it lasts a month. But then you look up, and suddenly a whole decade has just vanished without any measurable progress toward your actual goals.
Right, which is why, to combat that vanishing time, the author introduces this incredibly vital mechanical concept, the ratchet effect.
The ratchet. Yes, let's break that down.
So a physical ratchet is a tool, right? It has a gear and a pivoting, spring-loaded finger called a pawl. When you set it to tighten, the gear turns and takes up the slack. But the magic happens when you stop pulling. The pawl clicks into the teeth of the gear. It holds the tension. It physically prevents the gear from spinning backward.
It's such a perfect analogy. Because trying to build a system without a ratchet is basically like trying to sprint up a really steep, muddy hill while wearing smooth-soled dress shoes.
That sounds like a nightmare.
It is. You can expend a massive amount of cardiovascular energy, like working incredibly hard to run up that hill. But the second you stop to just catch your breath, gravity in the mud immediately slides you all the way back to the bottom.
Yeah, all that effort just erased.
Exactly. So the ratchet is like putting steel spikes on those shoes. It's like a mechanical save point in a video game. You fight for an inch, you step down, the spikes bite into the mud, and the system locks. Now, life cannot push you back past that point. You actually get to rest without lousing the ground you just bled for.
That's the key right there. Because when people don't have that ratchet installed in their lives, all their energy is spent just trying not to slide down the hill.
Which is exhausting.
Totally. Eventually, their temple capital runs low, their energy depletes, and they just wear out. This is the underlying mechanics of why people quietly quit in their careers or their marriages or their personal ambitions. They just got tired of constantly slipping backward.
Yeah. But the really beautiful thing about the ratchet is how it interacts with compounding over time.
Oh, the compounding is where the math gets fun.
Right. The author uses this analogy of an inchworm climbing a massive oak tree. It moves a tiny, tiny fraction of an inch at a time. If you stand there and just stare at it, the progress seems agonizingly slow. It almost feels pointless.
But then you walk away, come back a few hours later, and that worm has covered massive ground. Small, mechanically protected gains compound into massive transformations.
Right, but I guess the million-dollar question is, how do you actually build a ratchet into a human life?
Well, the chapter makes a really hard pivot right here to establish a foundational rule. Goals, entirely on their own, are completely useless.
Say it louder for the people in the back. I love this part.
I mean, big goals without systems are just comforting fantasies. Human motivation is just a chemical state. It spikes and it fades. Repeatable, trackable systems are literally the only things that mathematically matter.
Let's ground this in reality because the author provides this amazing case study. We are introduced to Nick. He's 22 years old, and he decides his macro goal is to be a millionaire by the time he is 42. So he's got a 20-year timeline.
Which is a great goal, but...
Right, but in my coaching practice, I hear goals like this all the time. Mm. You know, I want to be a VP by 35, or I want to retire early. But stating the destination is not the same thing as building a vehicle.
Exactly. But Nick actually builds the mathematical vehicle, and the numbers here are super specific. Nick starts his entry-level job at 22, and he commits to saving just $200 a month in year one.
Which is totally doable for most people.
Right. But his system dictates that he must increase that monthly contribution by $100 every single year for the first 5 years. So by year five, he is saving $600 a month.
And by systematically escalating the amount like that, he completely avoids lifestyle creep. He probably barely notices the budget constraint because his income is likely growing during those first 5 years anyway.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. But after year five, the math becomes significantly more demanding. To hit his $1 million goal, assuming a conservative 8% market return, Nick has to save $2,800 a month for the final 15 years.
Wow. Okay, so if you are listening to this right now, maybe you're driving to work or sitting at your desk, the idea of suddenly pulling an extra $2,800 out of your monthly budget probably sounds absolutely suffocating.
Oh, it sounds impossible for an average earner.
Right. But Nick doesn't rely on willpower to find that money. He relies on his ratchet.
Yes. Nick uses an AI tool, right? He prompts it with his timeline and his income, and he has it build a ruthlessly objective tracking spreadsheet. And that spreadsheet is the physical pawl of his ratchet.
The output is just binary.
Completely binary. If Nick's goal is to save $2,800 in March, but he only manages $2,775, the spreadsheet doesn't offer him any sympathy. It doesn't care that he had a hard week. It immediately forces a $25 reduction in his April expenses to catch up.
It's brilliant. And because that tracking is in place, Nick can actually introduce alternate accelerators to solve that $2,800 problem.
Right. He can't just wish for more money, but he can manipulate the variables.
Exactly. He might take on specialized gig work. Or, you know, you could buy a duplex, live in one half, and let the rental income cover his living expenses, which frees up massive cash flow.
Or he could invest in his intellectual capital. He could learn advanced market strategies and strive for a 15% return instead of 8%. Because if he hits 15%, that $2,800 monthly requirement drops dramatically.
Which just perfectly illustrates why temporal capital is the master currency. Yeah. Like, if Nick realizes in year three that he has excess energy and he decides to aggressively save $1,000 a month instead of his required $400, the compounding effect of that extra capital over the remaining 17 years massively reduces his burden later on.
It's all about the time horizon. But, you know, I want to analyze the psychology of this with you since you're a systems coach.
Sure.
When I lay out the sheer math of a 20-year compounding plan to people, they frequently become really defensive or honestly outright angry. They point to how many hours they work and they basically demand to know why their intense effort isn't yielding Nick's results. Like, why does the reality of this math upset people who are genuinely working hard?
Because it completely shatters their illusion. It really does.
Mm-hmm.
People rely heavily on what the author calls soft systems, which are entirely driven by comfort goals.
Soft systems.
Yeah. Let me update an old analogy here. Think of trying to navigate a really dense forest by just walking in the direction that feels downhill, assuming it will eventually lead to a river. You are expending energy. You are walking for miles, but you have no map, you have no compass, and you have no tracking.
Mm-hmm.
Setting a massive, vague 20-year goal like become wealthy without a spreadsheet basically allows you to fool yourself into comfort.
Oh, I see.
You tell yourself, well, I'm working 60 hours a week, so eventually the universe will just reward me.
Right.
But without tracking, without verified feedback loops, and without reverse-engineered accountability, all that unguided hard work just leads to exhaustion and burnout. You aren't building a compounding system. You are just aging.
Wow. You are just aging. That is perfectly stated. But look, Nick's spreadsheet is a fantastic tool for financial capital, but the underlying mechanics of that ratchet need to be applied universally, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, how do you apply a ratchet to improving your health or learning a new language or pivoting your career? This is where the author introduces the universal framework, the DRIVE method, D-R-I-V-E.
Let's really dissect this framework because this is the exact mechanical system you can install in your life today to stop sliding down that muddy hill. And the author also provides a specific way to integrate AI into every single step, basically acting as that ruthless accountability partner.
Right. So let's start with the D. The D in DRIVE stands for define your long-term target.
Okay.
You must establish the macro goal with absolute clarity. Ambiguity is the enemy of execution here.
It totally is. And the AI integration here is super practical. You basically use a language model as a brainstorming partner. You feed it your vague ideas, your constraints, your resources, and you force it to help you clarify a singular, measurable target.
That's a great use of AI. Next is the R, which stands for roadmap your incremental goals. This is the act of reverse engineering. If your target is 5 years away, what exact metric must you hit in year one? What does month one look like? What is the task for this Tuesday?
Break it all the way down.
Exactly. And for the AI integration, you prompt the AI to build that step-by-step roadmap for you. You ask it to identify the specific prerequisite skills you'll need or have it literally generate a weekly project plan based on your end date.
I love that. Okay, then comes I. Implement your tracking system. This is where you actually create the visual ratchet. The tracking system is what physically protects your progress.
It's out tracking, it's just a wish.
Right. And the AI integration here is exactly what Nick did. You literally instruct the AI to code a custom spreadsheet or recommend a highly specialized tracking app that is tailored exclusively to the metrics of your roadmap.
Perfect. Then V is for verify and adapt. This step is the literal paw of the ratchet clicking into the gear, because a tracking system is completely useless if you never look at it.
Obviously.
You must check the data consistently. If the numbers show you are falling behind, you do not wait until the end of the year to fix it. You adjust your behavior immediately.
And the AI integration is so critical here. If you hit a severe roadblock or miss a metric, you feed that failure directly into the AI. You ask it to analyze what went wrong and generate three new strategies to bypass the friction and get back on the timeline.
It removes the emotion from failure.
It really does. Nice. It's just troubleshooting. Finally, E. Mm-hmm. Execute the cycle. When you hit an incremental goal, you acknowledge the win to feed your psychological momentum, but you do not stop. You immediately begin the next cycle of the roadmap.
Keep a gear turning.
Right. And for the AI integration, you use it to review your past quarter's results, identify behavioral patterns and where you succeeded or failed, and then actively refine the actual process for your next loop.
It's a closed, self-improving loop.
It is. Now, let me play the skeptic for a second.
Do it.
Because I know listeners are absorbing this DRIVE method, you know, the granular tracking, the spreadsheets, the constant verification and adaptation. And a lot of them are probably thinking, that sounds utterly exhausting. I don't want to live my life like a machine. I just want to live.
It's a completely natural reaction. I hear it all the time. But the reality is actually inverted.
How so?
Drifting is what is truly exhausting. Think about it. Constantly having to reinvent your strategy, having to constantly remotivate yourself, and redoing the exact same work just to maintain your baseline against life's friction.
Wow.
That drains your soul.
Oh, that's so true.
The D-Drive method actually removes the emotional weight of decision-making. By making forward progress a matter of automatic binary execution, you actually free up a massive amount of mental energy to just go enjoy your life.
Yeah, you stop waking up at 3 a.m. wondering if you're going to be okay in 10 years. The system holds that anxiety for you.
Exactly.
Let's synthesize everything we've covered here and just weave together the core philosophy that you need to take away from this analysis.
Okay. The entire premise rests on accepting that standing still is a myth. Life is an environment of friction. If you aren't intentionally advancing, that friction mathematically guarantees your regression.
Right. And at the center of this environment is temporal capital. Time is the master currency that ultimately dictates the value of everything else you possess.
Which means we all have to take responsibility for the default life arc. Average, mediocre outcomes are rarely the result of people actively trying to fail. They are just the inevitable mathematical result of drifting without a system.
Yes. Big, sweeping goals without a granular system to back them up are nothing more than comforting fantasies.
Your momentum must be protected. The ratchet effect is operating in your life right now, whether you acknowledge it or not. You are either actively locking in your incremental gains through tracking, or you are quietly, steadily giving that ground back to the current.
And motivation will always abandon you when you are tired. Systems are what carry you through the exhaustion.
That's why the D-Drive method is designed specifically to make your progress unavoidable. Not taking ground intentionally is the exact same thing as surrendering it.
Ultimately, designing a life of sovereignty requires daily, mechanical execution and a flat-out, uncompromising refusal to accept that default life arc.
Absolutely. And to really solidify this mental shift, the author ends the chapter with three specific mental code rewrites. These are literal instructions meant to be installed directly into your daily operating system.
Yeah, these are great. I'm going to read these exactly as they're written in the chapter, so really let these sink in. Computer, execute all tasks with urgency. My time is a finite resource. Computer, every time a long-term goal is set, execute mandatory reverse engineering to determine the smallest next actionable step.
What?
Computer, push me toward excellence. The average life is an unacceptable outcome.
Powerful stuff. And look, if you want to dive deeper into these frameworks or dissect the math further or find more tools to start building your own tracking systems, you can find a wealth of resources over at jackslaws.com.
Absolutely. Make sure you explore jackslaws.com for the full scope of the material. But before we close out this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final mechanical thought to chew on as you go about the rest of your day.
Leave them with a question.
Think about the actions you took this morning and the actions you plan to take tonight. If the ratchet of your life clicks today, did it lock in a millimeter of forward progress, or did the gear slip backward while you weren't looking?
The current never stops pulling.
It never does. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Head over to jackslaws.com, and we will see you on the next one.